love.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. This is Loveline. With Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. Adam Carolla is once again having technical problems. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. And tonight we welcome into the studio a dear, 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 dear friend of the show, Debbie Gibson.
Thank you.
Debbie, how are you?
Good to be back. It's been a few years.
It has been a while. Last time we saw you, I think we went and visited you at the set of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, right?
Yes, you came to see my show. We dragged Adam kicking and screaming to his very first musical.
Yes.
I think he liked it despite himself.
Did he behave himself? He didn't.
I don't think he did anything to embarrass
me. Stand up in the middle of performance.
And yell, yo, Debbie, Electric Youth rules. Yeah, no, he didn't do anything like that.
And so now you've graduated from the teen idol sort of image to something a little more sophisticated. Yeah, Adam, what's happening, dude?
Oh, I was on the whole time.
That's nice. Great.
Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
Oh, you know, flustered. Let me just catch everyone up on what's going on.
Okay.
I'll be very quick. I'm on my cell phone. I'm in North Carolina. Now, the reason I'm not on the phone that's in my hotel room is because that was disconnected so they could hook up the ISDN line, which worked flawlessly a few hours ago.
Oh.
Until now housekeeping came and... Go ahead, sorry.
No, something happened at this end.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened on my end, but something happened on your end, and now Ron, the engineer, is feverishly racing down to Westwood One. So hopefully we can have this sorted out in the next few minutes.
Great. And you've moved from Tampa to Charlotte?
I'm in Charlotte. It's wonderful and lonely.
Any more NASCAR fans you run into?
No, have not.
What?
Thankfully, have not run into any more NASCAR fans. Well, I haven't run into anybody. The town is empty. I think they're fumigating or something.
Well, listen, it's unfortunate you're not here to look at this Playboy that Debbie's in. Amazing.
Well, the good news is
oh, no.
I scanned it before I left.
Woohoo!
And got a nice cranial and retina full of it. So I actually brought it with me on the plane. I mean, not the actual Playboy, but the memory of Debbie naked in it.
There needs a couple stages of translation of that statement.
Oh God!
It was used. The memory was used. Is that what you're saying?
It has been soiled, and yet is not done being punished.
Now, way too much information.
Now, you have a new CD or new single.
New single.
Naked.
What a coinkydink.
Strangely enough.
Yeah, I actually had been writing the song before the call from Playboy came in. And Playboy had been approaching me over the years from the time I was like 17, jailbait. I was writing this song, and it's very much about just kind of being who you are with no apologies and putting it out there no matter what. Kind of no matter what the consequences and no matter what the reward, in a way. And it's really about that in the context of a relationship, but it could be about anything. And for me lately, that's kind of been a metaphor for my life. I feel like I reached some kind of point in my 30s where I just suddenly really didn't care what people thought anymore, which is such a great freeing feeling. And I know so many women who do Playboy use the words freeing and empowering, but it really is, because it's not about just about the nudity. It's about kind of breaking your own rules and saying, you know what, I know I said I would never do this, but if you say you're never going to do something 15 years ago, does that mean you have to stick with it if you actually change your mind?
Well, it's also not like you're a 19-year-old doing it.
Well, that's the thing. I waited till I was 34. I feel like, you know, I don't have any 10-year-old fans anymore.
But at 34, it's triumphant to be able to still compete in that arena, right?
Well, thank you.
You know what I mean? Well,
I feel better than ever, so yeah.
And you're not a kid who doesn't quite understand what she's getting into.
Exactly.
Or what the implications are going to be, or a life ahead of you. What are you going to, kids, what are you tell your
right.
kids kind of thing?
No, it seemed like a perfect time for all those reasons, and also for that reason too, is that I'm not married, I don't have kids of my own at this point. It just seemed like this perfect window in my life to do it. So I'm really excited.
Sorry, Dave, but
go ahead.
Did you go into like training Like you know, I mean, if you knew, how far in advance did you know?
Do you know I only knew 3.5 weeks before the shoot?
No way.
Yeah, so it, you know, I was already doing spinning and Pilates and all of my normal stuff that I do. But, you know, I'm a girl, like I go up 5 pounds, I go down 5 pounds. And I made it my mission to train and to look good, but I wasn't like obsessed with creating a whole other human being. I was kind of like, I want to take what I have and refine it. And I went to Gunnar Peterson, who trains every diva in this town. And so, you know, he knows how to sculpt a body pretty quickly. And he said, look, you've got a good foundation because you've clearly been active your whole life. But I also love the fact that I have probably 15 pounds on all of the TV girls here in LA. You know what I mean? I'm not like a waif thin person and I don't have any fake body parts. And I thought that was a cool, I don't know. I felt really good about showing that. And I've had women come up to me and say that. They're like, we're glad you have like a, you kind of represent a normal woman's body. Because a lot of people do
tell me that all the time.
Really? Yes. That you represent a normal woman's body?
No, yeah, man's body. But hairier.
Body.
At least from the waist up. It's a little too hairy in the bottom to be normal.
We'll alert Playgirl. Adam.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Listen, I've sent my Zed card into them more than I can count. How does it work? How often would Playboy contact you? I imagine at the beginning of your career, you would get a phone call every other day, right?
This was like the fourth or fifth time. The last time they approached me was about 5 years ago when I was doing the musical Gypsy, playing a burlesque queen. And at that time, I said, you know, I was kind of intrigued by it at that point, and I said I'd be interested in thinking about it if I could choose a photographer and really do it the right way, because you know there are obviously different levels that people do Playboy on. And I said, you know, if I could do kind of almost a takeoff on my theater roles and like kind of something a little more highly stylized and theatrical, I'd be into talking about it. And they were kind of like, no, we wanted to use our staff photographer on this shoot, and they had a specific thing in mind and it didn't fit what I wanted to do. So I said no, and then they came to me. Here we are about 5 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, I think like a couple of the people from Playboy saw me at an event or something.
But
and
this,
said,
this can't really hurt your career anymore. I mean, anyone's career, really, can it? I mean, in the past,
I don't think so.
I think it's people worried in the past about it damaging their career.
You know what? I've given up on worrying about that anyway, because, you know, I remember like when I was having hit records and I was going into theater, the record exec said, don't do theater, it'll kill your pop career. And then, you know, you go do something and they go, don't do that, it'll kill your theater career. And don't do that. And you could live your life like that. And the truth is, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Right.
So I just gave up on worrying about the results. And I said,
that,
I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Adam, with Playboy, the stakes are up, have been ratcheted up so high now in terms of the things that people could get involved with. That Playboy is like doing Time Life
it's
now.
It's so
you know what
like
I mean?
The iconic, it's, classic.
But
you
I mean,
know,
compared
yeah,
to what might, you know, the stuff, the equivalent of Playboy 20 years ago today is like stripping
and,
or
you
something.
You know, I find like, and I find some of the Maxims and FHMs and those magazines, actually, even though the girls aren't showing everything, I find them to be raunchier.
Mm-hmm.
I think the quality of the photographs is different. And they're
certainly artistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so,
they're definitely like, you know, a straddling beer kegs. And stuff,
exactly.
You know?
There is a centerfold. I keep accidentally opening up to the centerfold of this issue, though, with the girl with the shower head.
This one?
Yeah.
I have to see that.
You have to. Oh, there it is.
Oh, there it is. Yeah,
you just always naturally open to that.
I didn't notice that's what she was doing.
I had like an airline employee approach me on the jetway yesterday to sign this, and we, of course, accidentally opened to that one, like as children are passing
by. And is this what they call a Brazilian wax? Is that what that
I
is?
I think that's a. Is that a landing strip, I think?
We had a discussion about that last night.
I never learned so much about that till I had to do this. And the woman who like works on a lot of the celebrities that end up doing shoots said, you know what? She goes, every celebrity girl that comes to me says the same thing. They're like, I don't know anything about this stuff. I'm not so into that, you know, the whole
thing. Discovered last night that the people that do that have got to have recently immigrated to this country and not speak English terribly well. They have to be sort of non-people.
What do you mean, the people that do the actual
waxing? Stuff? Yes.
Oh, no, this woman is like, this woman's been doing it for years on everybody. I think it's just the funniest profession.
She doesn't have a heavy accent?
No, but she is abroad. You know what I mean? She does have that kind of like, you know.
Does she have long hair?
You have to be kind of aggressive. Not big hair, but no, she's got like a, she's tough. I mean, how could you do that for a living and not kind of be a little, you know.
Rough and tumble.
That's a good way of putting it. Rough and tumble.
Somebody has to outfit her with those, you know, glasses that have the camera in it.
Ew. Okay, ew. Okay,
wow,
ew.
But I'm just saying, can you imagine all the clientele she sees?
Oh, God, I know. Believe me, I'm not going to say who, but I know who goes in and out of that office, and it's, like, amazing. If the paparazzi got wind of that place, forget it.
You know, it'd be funny. It'd be funny just to get some guys' pictures up there, like, at the actual office, like Jim Belushi, you know?
No, I think some guys go there, too.
No.
Really?
Yes.
For
yes,
one?
No guys way. Get, like, what? Grooming and whatever they get. Yep, apparently.
Are there pictures up?
No, they don't have pictures of anybody up.
Oh, my God.
It's a little more discreet than that.
I think people are too nutty.
But that was the thing, too, about this, is that I didn't want to show everything, and they basically were like, you're not our model, you know, we want you to do what you want to do. They said, you know, Sharon Stone will come up to us now 20 years after doing it and say, I'm still so proud that I did it, and that's what we want from all our celebrities. And so they were very, very cool. They really let me create the whole vibe of the shoot, which I was happy about.
Do you get final approval on the pictures?
Basically, they shot about 1,500 pictures over the course of 3 days, and I narrowed them down to 150, and then they picked the final, like, 9 or 10 that they used.
Wow.
Now, are some of them like, well, this show's too much, so I'm going to take this one out of the mix?
Yeah, you know what? I said that since the wording in the contract was such that I wasn't required to do anything in particular, I said, well, I'll go for it and feel free to do whatever I feel like in the shoot, and then I'll see. And I just don't find the full frontal nudity attractive. I think that I like the old, I like the more classic Playboy pictures, and so that's what I went with at the end of the day. A little, like, almost.
You could redhead. Yeah.
Natural redhead.
I don't want to let people, you know, are sitting at home listening, thinking about buying this, and not to go out and buy. You could see quite a bit.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, but I'm not, you know, no, well, you can see there's like that like,
she's trying
center.
To sell the magazine.
Okay,
for
I sell the magazine.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, like, I saw some people's pictorials where they're like literally like doing a backbend over a rock with everything, like, you know, I mean, and it's like, you know, it's like, it's, I don't want it to look like we're in a gynecologist's office. You know, I still want it to look like a photo shoot.
Yeah. See, Adam, if gynecologists had the same impulse as your dentist, say, imagine what that would be like.
Tasteful,
I don't even
yet,
want to be
provocative, I think we can call it.
Yes,
but
tasteful.
So and so what now? Another CD, more musical theater?
Yeah, basically.
You're going to be out promoting the CD, right?
I'll be out promoting the CD, and basically, I ended up recording this on my own because we had a label that shall remain nameless, and basically the head of the label. This was one of the interesting things, too, about the psychology of doing Playboy. The head of the label, who had a gazillion dollars and the jets and was putting all the money behind the single, turned out to be so chauvinistic and condescending, and, like, it literally was making me feel physically ill. And I kept going, this is amazing that nobody at Playboy made me feel this way, but a record executive made me feel this way.
Interesting.
So that deal imploded right before the first of the year, and then I ended up taking money out of my own pocket, recording it on my own, getting it distributed on my own. So it's a little bit of, like, that's always an uphill battle way of doing it.
Risky.
But I decided that, well, what I decided again, what I was talking about with the result was, I'm just going to put it out there and say, look, this is so that people can see what I'm up to musically. I'm not putting the marketing dollars behind it that guarantee that it's going to be
a
top 10
single.
I was watching
American Idol tonight. I thought, you should be the celebrity judge. You know how they do that?
You know, they were at one point talking to me.
It'd be great for promoting
this. Like, Paula was possibly not going to renew. And they were,
no, but I mean, even they have a celebrity there.
Ugh. I don't know why they, you know. I don't know. I did the American Juniors thing with them.
Adam?
I think anything to do with that American Junior show, they don't want to be reminded of. Oh. So they're not having me back.
Oh. Adam, well, you did.
Yeah.
Are you on Zephyr and phone?
No, I don't know. Now. Can you hear me this way?
There we go.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, really? Let me try this.
Yeah, you're on Zephyr.
All right,
it's good.
Hold on. All right, let me hang up this thing.
Can you hear me? Are you hanging up, Adam? You have to make a big flourish out of it so we hear you hanging
Yellow?
Up. Yeah, yeah. You hear us?
Oh, very nice.
Well, that works.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's good, too, huh?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, you know what's funny about my horrible personality and work ethic?
what's good about it?
Well, no, it's what's bad about it, really. What's unique about it, and the same thing happened to me. I'm in Charlotte shooting some stupid commercial, and at one point they were having camera problems.
Oh.
And it's the same with any technical difficulty, which is my first impulse is, let's fix it. Let's get Drew.
Okay.
Your first impulse is always 1,000% wrong, is
all right,
it not?
Fair enough. Go ahead.
All right,
yes, it is.
Shut your pie hole. Let me finish my first impulse. My first impulse is like, fix the camera. Let's get going. Let's hurry up. This is a delay. But then the second one is, don't fix the camera. Let's go home.
Let's go home.
Right. Yeah. In which case, they always fix the camera. As soon as I shift to let's go home, and it's the same thing with this. My thing is like, the Zephyr doesn't work. We got to get the Zephyr working. And then the next impulse is, wait a minute, I'm going to get drunk
or
and go to bed.
To sleep. Right.
Wait a minute. Exactly. I've never seen you do the let's fix it thing. I've never seen that. So I only hear the second impulse. I do hear you yelling at people about the fix it thing. Like, why didn't you? Why did this happen? Let's go home.
Well, no, you have to pretend like you want them to
right,
fix it.
There you go. See, that sounds more like you.
I'm kind of with you, though. I just moved into a new house, and I don't have my phones hooked up yet, and so I've got to do a radio tour from my house tomorrow on my cell phone, which is really risky. And I'm with you because on one hand, I'm like, oh, my God, let's pray it works.
And
then and then I'm like, but if it doesn't, that's an hour and a half of talking at 6 in the morning I can avoid.
Yeah. No, I think everyone has that sort of, it's the snow day thing you have as a kid.
Yeah. We had a snow day once on the day of a talent contest that I was really looking forward to.
we would just have earthquake days and four-stage smog alert days, but... But you know
East
that
Coast,
feeling?
West Coast thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like just, there's an earthquake. Oh, my God. And then the second impulse is, wait a minute. I may not have to do something. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Drew, are you that way? Do you have that?
No.
You don't?
I really don't. Not even a shred. I'm
so
sorry.
Like when you were at school and, I don't know, earthquake or it would rain for a week and they were talking about shutting the school down, you weren't delighted?
I have a different kind of thing that goes on because I had a school and then graduate school and training and stuff where nothing stopped it. So it just meant more hassle. I'm expected to be there. How the hell am I going to get there?
No, but it never stopped.
There was never a nuclear holocaust didn't stop the damn
you're
thing.
You're not listening to me, Drew. They call it off. It's not about your car not starting. Obviously, I'm not excited when something like that happens. I'm saying something breaks, forces a stop.
He's saying it just never happened in his world.
It just stops. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, no, forget about school. You're out doing some sort of annoying shoot or something, and there's a problem with the equipment, and somebody says, I don't know if I can fix this, and you really want to go home.
No, you know why? Because it just means, all right, now I'm behind.
Right.
Now I'm behind. Now I got another – where am I going to put that now? I got another day ahead that's already booked up with stuff I got to do, and I got to add this.
Well, Adam, you might get your wish because you've just called this commercial you're doing stupid like 8 times. They're going to fire you as a spokesperson anyway.
Good.
So you get the day off that way.
More time. Woohoo! Yeah.
Oh, you want to take some calls?
All right.
Keep talking. We don't have to.
Well,
maybe the phone lines aren't working and we don't have to, Adam.
It's 10:17.
Yeah, all right. Let's take a call.
All right, let's do that. Let's talk to Nicole, who's 20.
Nicole? Hello.
Hey there.
Hi, this is Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
My question for Dr. Drew is I wanted to know your professional opinion about female egg donation.
Adam, donation.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's the only thing you donate for 10 grand. You think about it. When you donate your car or you donate your television or you donate some blood, do you get between 5 and 10 grand for it?
The point Adam's making is you're selling your eggs.
Yeah, they call it donation. So you can sleep at night, but you're selling eggs.
And that's, in fact, one of the things that people sort of take issue with this whole phenomenon, which is that we're creating a market in human products.
But it's got to be such an emotional leap for a woman that there's, it's some kind of compensation,
And women, they need money for I'd rather they do this than go stripping. And the fact is, though...
Whoa.
I'm sorry, Adam. I'm sorry. I know I've offended you with that one. You draw the line there, I know. But we hear this business, which is all actually nonsense. Well, she had to go stripping. She had to get her way through college. It's like, no, that's nonsense. They were stripping because they were trauma survivors.
Can you not bash stripping and just talk about egg donation?
All right, so the egg donation thing, it's hyperstimulation of the ovaries. It's a surgery to retrieve the eggs. it's fairly safe. We don't know any long-term consequences. There are concerns about, obviously, the surgery and about the possibility of maybe putting women at a risk for ovarian cancer. And we don't know the effects, full effects on fertility and what age you might achieve, menopause. And there are things that can happen. I mean, you're messing with your biology to do this. But it looks fairly safe based on what we understand today. And then as Debbie is saying, the issue of having somebody out there with your genetic makeup.
That's what I was going to say. Do they do studies on kind of what happens to people that, you know, I mean, yeah, do these women, is it almost like being a surrogate or, you know, like putting a child up for adoption? Do you kind of wonder where your child is and try to trace who got your egg? Or
you wonder. I don't know any data that's followed that. I don't think it's that big a deal. I never hear much about it. But you wonder if that could have an impact on people.
I would wonder. I feel like I would be walking down the street thinking, oh, my God, that person looks like me.
Well, you know what?
And they just wrote a cheesy pop song. It must be my egg.
I feel, every time I see a guy with a monobrow, I think, wait a minute. I may have left some sperm somewhere. But, no, here's an interesting point, and I call it interesting because it's going to come out of my mouth, so it's convenient.
It's always,
but,
yeah.
You know how guys don't seem to have the connection when they get a woman pregnant and it's their child, but yet it was only their seed and they move on.
Right.
And the mother's sort of bound because of the 9-month gestation period.
Yes.
Maybe this is almost the equivalent for the woman. Just her seed.
Except I think women, in addition to the sort of biological commitment of pregnancy, have a natural instinct to take care of whatever their genetic material, wherever it goes.
I agree, yeah. But you know, it would be interesting that if it was the other way around, you know, just the woman provided the seed and then went back to work, and guys carried, you know, felt the little thing kicking inside of them for 9 months.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
That was based on a true story, too.
Of course.
I bet a lot of guys would turn the corner, and I bet a lot of women would go back to work.
Could be.
Yeah, so maybe this is sort of an interesting sociological experiment, because I bet these women don't carry around the baggage that a woman who gave their child up for adoption carries around.
And you could even argue that some of that is not just the carrying around part, but the biology of being attached to somebody for a long period of time.
And the, you know, hormonal changes that go on during pregnancy.
So there you go, Nicole.
Well, and I also wanted to know, because you guys brought up a lot of interesting points, do you know at all if, by doing this, if it stimulates any desire to be nurturing or mothering or anything like that?
We don't know. That's what we're speculating about here. We don't know. I've not heard complaints about that. We certainly hear complaints about the adoption issue, but we've not heard people complain about this.
Well, I don't think she means toward the child. I think she just means when the eggs
in general,
are stimulated.
The hormones that they give you or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, it's that kind of the opposite. Because they sort of put you into a menopause state and then they hyperstimulate the ovary that way.
Yeah. Hey, but Nicole.
Yes.
What do you, how tall are you?
I knew that was
what these things are worth.
Sounds a little young to me to be
20.
Yeah.
It's sort of the age, though.
Really?
5'6".
Yeah. 5'6", here we go.
College education?
Yeah, I'm working on it right now. I'm 20, so I've only
junior
been
college
for 2 years. Yeah.
Junior college?
Community college.
Junior college.
Yeah, junior college. All right. That sounds better.
we're gonna deduct not only $2,000 for the junior college, but another $500 penalty for being evasive.
Calling
it community college when in fact it's junior college.
Yeah. Penalty.
That's an expensive lesson.
Keep going, Adam.
So you're tall. What color are your eyes?
I have green eyes.
Ooh.
At 300.
I've been
sending that egg into the world,
like Catherine Zeta-Jones, from many, many people.
Really?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
because
I take that as a wonderful compliment. I think she's a beautiful woman. And personally, I see it in my eyes and in my lips, but I don't know. I really appreciate it. I've heard it a lot.
All right. Well, okay. Here's the thing. If you're attractive and you're like tall and you're smart, on 2 out of 3 ain't bad. You get to charge more for your egg.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I've heard you can charge up to like $10,000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I saw that. Why do they always put those ads in the movie theater? They put them on movie theater screens.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
You've seen that on a movie theater screen?
Yes, I sure have.
Wow.
For your egg?
In New York.
New York.
Yeah.
That sounds like a New York
If you want to donate eggs, call 1-800
Eggs.
Egg donor. Yeah, I don't know.
Scramble.
Scramble.
I don't even remember exactly where I heard. I watch a lot of Discovery Channel and Science Channel. I think I saw it somewhere on there, and it sparked my interest. I just looked at it online, and I was like, ah, that's such a bad idea.
All right,
there we go.
Honor, please.
Yes, I got it.
But no, watching a lot of Discovery Channel, now that kicks you up about $175, you know?
That's right. Even with the community college penalties there. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, because my whole thing is, like, I'd be like, what music do you listen to? You know, what TV shows do you watch? You know, like, if you're a big Mark Anthony fan, that's a deduction.
I was just about to ask.
Big deduction.
That's a huge deduction.
You know, okay, well, then you wouldn't want mine, because I like Mark Anthony, and I'm 34, you don't want those old eggs.
So hot. Yeah. Now, you know what? I would be great, because I would grind these women down to the point where they were paying us to give the eggs. I would be the guy who went in there and just broke them down to the point where I damaged their self-esteem so badly that they actually just dropped off an egg and left.
Nice.
Yeah, that'd be my job, Drew. All right, Drew, send us to break.
Let's do that. It's Loveline. Adam is out in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're here with Debbie Gibson, and we'll be right back. Hey, it's Loveline. Dr. Drew here. Adam in Charlotte, North Carolina. Debbie Gibson in studio. And I've just taken a little walk down memory lane and looking at the old photograph album of Loveline of Days of Yore. And there's Debbie in there like five times.
You know what, though? I look older then than I do now. It's weird. Went through some
phase. Are you complaining
phase.
About that?
No, it's great now. But I look back then, I think I was just like...
You're mature.
I don't know. I went through some really weird transition. And I think of the kids now, this is when I sound old,
performers.
That are out there performing at 18, 19, 20, 21, and they have their image together and their look, and they seem comfortable with their bodies. I'm in there with like...
Debbie, that's all drugs.
An in-between hair color, like a big plaid oversized shirt on. I'm like, what was I thinking? No makeup. I didn't care. You know, it just wasn't my selling point at the time.
Debbie, how old were you when you got started?
16.
And you mean that's when you released your first album, or that's when you hitting the malls?
That's what the malls was Tiffany, Adam.
Well, no, I meant shopping with all your new money.
Yeah, yeah.
New money.
Yeah, I didn't really shop in the malls with the new money.
So your mom used to tour with you, didn't she?
Well, when I was a teenager,
she was really very much a part of your life.
Well, she's still my manager, and we've gone through interesting transitions, because in the beginning, it was very much about protection, you know, protecting.
Of course, you're 16,
me.
Yeah.
16, which I don't think there's enough of right now, because you hear some scary things coming out of teenagers' mouths in the industry. And then we kind of went through our normal mother-daughter, split, but yet she was still managing me. And then we kind of almost transitioned into, like, her being the boss, and then we went into, like, me really being the boss. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting. Now we're really, like, business partners.
Nice.
And we're friends, and we're mother-daughter.
Are you single now?
I am.
Single.
How was mom with Playboy?
She was totally cool.
She doesn't know about it yet, Adam.
She caught the deal. She was totally cool. I mean, she's very much all about, look, if you're comfortable, I'm comfortable, and I'll make it happen for you. And if there's like a shred of me not being comfortable with something, she'll go, don't do it. Because her whole MO has always been, look, you know, like she always said to the record company execs, I know that you guys might want to use her up and throw her out, but I'd like a whole human being at the end of this whole process. So we're going to pace it out a little more and work on that. So it's very cool. But yeah, 16 was when I signed my record deal and released my first single. And actually, I started performing in the clubs. I did three shows a night, four nights a week for a year until that single got off the ground, which amazes me too. Yeah, because now you see people with reality TV shows, they enter at number one. Only in My Dreams took 65 weeks to get to number one. 65 weeks of like literally pounding the pavement. Like going to these clubs and
like what kind of clubs were they?
Oh my God. Well, I would do a teen club, a straight club, and a gay club. And all over the country, all in one night. And I would do that three nights a week. I would get in the car, change. My sister, my older sister, did sound and lights.
Wow.
I had two young gay backup dancers from Long Island and my mom. We were like the Von Trapp family.
Wow.
But doing clubs. It was the funniest. I'm like, where was reality television back then? Because that stuff was funny. I mean, she was like collecting money in the basement of these clubs from the mafia men and from the drag queens and from what, and they would all try to say, no, we'll pay her later. Nope. She would have to stand there and go, she's not stepping foot on that stage before I get the money up front. And
it was a
trip. But I mean, I played clubs here in East LA. I played a club that closed down the following week because of the violence. Like I played it like right before it closed down. I mean, I was escorted in by armed men and all this crazy stuff. I mean, It was interesting. You mean, but you know what?
Riots? Was it? Were you talking about the riots?
No, I'm not talking about the riots. I'm talking about just clubs that had a lot of violence. And they were, you know, yeah.
Remember the good old days in East LA.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We're talking 86, 87. Yeah. And, yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say something else, but.
How about some calls?
All right.
All right.
Let's do it. This is Joe, 29.
Hi. I had a question that I was hoping you guys could answer without being made fun of too much. I was with a little bit of an older gal, and we started having, you know, normal sex at first, and she was cheating on her husband. I was cheating on my girlfriend at the time.
Well, that's completely normal. I mean, that's how every relationship starts. That's normal. Yeah, okay.
Drew, you're making fun.
Well, we got together as a couple, and we started having, you know, kinkier and kinkier sex. I mean, no golden showers, no scat or blood or amputation or, you know, insane, but...
Well, that's where you drew the line, I understand, Joe. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's anything that was unhealthy, but, I mean, we did, you know, a lot of toys, some S&M, some biting, a lot of vegetables, just anything you can think of, really.
Well, yeah.
And I'm wondering, am I ever going to be able to go back and look at a girl and be with her again, a new girl, and just have missionary sex and be satisfied?
I've got some thoughts, Adam. Why don't you start? Go ahead.
Well, who pushed the whole agenda? Because, you know, if
we
you're participating
did,
in
mostly,
it.
She was mostly her, but I mean, I didn't lag very far behind in the curve at all.
But right. let me just use my magic powers for a second. You guys were also drug buddies or drinking buddies or something, right?
Well, you know, your magic powers have turned out right, sir.
Yeah, and this yeah, I know. I know what this is. This is addiction. This is all part of the addictive process. And the problem is when you get your arousal system all beaked up like that, it is hard to go back to regular sex. You always want those higher levels of arousal to sort of get that extra high, just the way you deal with the drugs and the alcohol. And this is all part of your addiction. So just to stay focused on your question, the only way you're going to go back to regular intimate relations is if you get into some form of recovery.
Well, we're off the dope for years now. I mean, yeah. It's been probably 2 years since I've done it. She says it's been a year for her.
Yeah, but you're still drinking, and there's still stuff going on here.
Right.
You're not in recovery. And you need to really focus on a full program of recovery, if that's what you want to do. It's up to you.
Well, are you still with the same woman?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
That's not just like, you know, just running my mouth, but we're off the drugs. I mean,
well,
I don't,
why are you worried about going back then to some other,
to other
more
women,
normal?
Yeah.
If you guys are having your fun at the level you're having it,
well, it's not as much fun now.
Right,
I mean,
so you wanna,
it's still there,
yeah.
But you know, the crazy sex and everything has left me, you know, kind of laissez-faire attitude towards the usual deal.
No, all right,
see,
put Joe on hold.
Yeah,
let me talk
it.
About Joe
yeah,
for a second.
Yeah, well, you and I will join. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Joe's one of these guys that has a rap. You know what I'm saying?
He's using his rap right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a talker. And, you know, yeah, you're right, and you're right on. He's off the dope or whatever he was on, but he's drinking plenty.
Yeah.
And he's probably chipping away at whatever else he was doing.
Yeah.
And his whole rap is, hey, it's been 2 years since I've done any heroin or done any speed. Not exactly. You've been getting drunk quite a bit, probably chain smoking, probably drinking a pot of coffee every day, and also probably chipping away a little bit here and there with the speed or the heroin or whatever the hell you were into before. So what you're basically telling them to do is drop the rap and clean up completely, and this thing's going to reorganize itself.
Because the thing with the addiction in general is that the sexual behaviors get wrapped into it, and they need to be escalated as well. So now, even though they're using the toys and this or that, it's still all flat for them. So he's got to even up the ante, and what they'll usually start doing is sort of dangerous things or bringing other people in or prostitution, all that kind of good stuff. So he's on hold.
Put him back on. I want to see if we can get through to him.
All right.
Joe?
Yes?
Is this true, what we've been saying?
You are somewhat close to it, yes. I haven't, and it wasn't like speed or heroin. I mean, it was just whatever anybody had I was came to do. And I don't do any of those anymore. Sometimes I smoke a little pot, and I do drink. Yeah. I'm drinking right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Shocking.
Shocking.
Joe really knows how to drive home a point. All right.
Well, Joe, we got your number.
Yeah, our point is I'm not one of these 12-step guys, but they tell you you have to sort of relinquish control, and you don't seem like you want to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's up to you. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm saying if you want to change,
but what you're saying is basically it's just going to keep getting more and more destructive.
He's going to keep
it's
a progressive process, right? People have a grave misconception about what it is when people get drug and alcohol problems. It's not about the drugs and the alcohol. It's about the brain systems being disordered and all the behaviors that ensue, and that whole process, the spiritual, emotional, and biological, physical aspects of the disease, it all has to be dealt with. Not doing the drugs is one itty bitty little piece. That's where you get started.
Right.
And if he really wants to improve, he can. If he doesn't want to, enjoy.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
And listen, you know, there's something sort of strangely liberating about exercising a little control over yourself. Like deciding there's a few things that you do that you don't want to do and actually stopping.
Oh, Adam, what did you stop recently? It sounded very personal.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Did you give up something for Lent, Adam?
Lent.
I was going to, and then I saw Debbie's Playboy spread. And I thought,
next week.
It's on. It's on.
In the plane.
That's right.
Oh, my. All right, this now is Jacqueline, who is has no age up there. Jacqueline, what's up?
Hey.
She's ageless, timeless.
Ageless.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Sounds young.
I'm 18.
18. What's going on?
Depressed.
I have a question. Does a bladder infection mess with your period at all?
You're either 18 and depressed, or you're actually 15. So which is it?
I'm 18.
All right.
And depressed.
Are you taking antibiotics for the bladder infection?
No.
How do you know you have a bladder infection, not an STD or something else?
I'm not sexually active.
Okay. Good answer.
Mm-hmm.
And what? How do you know you have a bladder infection?
I don't know. I just felt like it.
Whoa. What's up, Jacqueline? Are you depressed?
No.
Are you asleep?
No.
No.
You're what? Hello?
Yeah.
Are you asleep?
Hey. No.
All right, Jacqueline, you got to do something. If you're depressed, tell us. If not, how about you get it together and rally just a little bit, sweet pea? You're on national goddamn radio.
Okay.
Sorry for disturbing you, you idiots. How dare you people call this show and do this? Get it together.
Here's the deal. Periods can be, and particularly in many women, a very, very delicate process. And, of course, it can, in almost any medical condition, can affect your period. And certainly the treatments for it definitely can, the antibiotics and things like that. So, yeah, if you think you have some sort of infection, if you have any kind of medical problem, why don't we get that taken care of and not sit around and obsess about why my periods aren't the way they normally are?
Go to the doctor.
Why don't we go to break?
Yeah. Let me just say this.
I need to go to the gynecologist right now.
Let me say this before we go to break. I'm wondering if people, after traveling through the South here over the last few days, I'm starting to realize that people are losing the ability to communicate altogether.
Oh, yes.
And and I realize those people who cannot communicate are now giving birth to kids and starting a new generation of people who can communicate even less.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering if 70 years from now, we're just going to have a crawl with a subtitle under every conversation.
She would have been better with the text messaging, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or we're going to be
part of the problem.
Maybe we're going to revert to some sort of like science fiction, like species where we just walk in the room and are silent,
we grunt.
But our thoughts go back and forth, our heads pulsate a little bit, and we understand each other.
Better yet, I just come up and spray you. And you're like,
you've
Adam's
tried that so many times, Adam. Yeah. Come on.
Adam's either hungry, horny, or both. Yeah, maybe, you know, Debbie brings up a good point, though. Maybe all the text messaging and emailing has further eroded everyone's ability to communicate.
I hardly email because I feel like,
the theory is it's resurrecting the skill of letter writing, you know?
It's not letter writing. The letter writing has to do with handwriting and waiting and being patient for a letter. That's the romance of letter writing.
And spending a lot of time thinking it through and writing out carefully.
Yeah, not spell check. And, yeah, I don't think it's, I don't know. And text messaging, you don't even have to come up with your own. You can choose from a list. Mm-hmm. Can't call you now. Talk later. Like you don't even have to write your own.
We'll just lose the ability to communicate altogether. It'll be awesome.
And then we'll all be on a TiVo system. It'll
but
be
not
amazing.
You, Adam.
No,
you're
well,
so good at communicating.
Thank you, sweetness. If I was there, I would give you a nice dry hump.
Plus, but you're not. You communicate that very well.
Let's
Thank
do.
Thank you. Okay. Take a break, Drew.
Yes, it is Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Debbie Gibson is our guest, and we'll be right back. Loveline, y'all. That's how Adam's going to be talking now that he's spent the last week in the Southeast. Yeah. Debbie Gibson in the studio, yeah, y'all. And it's 1-800-LOVE-191. Charlotte's an interesting town, isn't it? I guess no one's there, as you don't know.
I don't know. I haven't been outside of the hotel.
Just to shoot your stupid commercial.
By the way, you are missing yet another biblical dumping of water upon this town of Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. I flew in last night. It was like 2 hours delayed because of the rains.
Yeah, Adam. You know, I've been, it's crazy because I think we've, you know, smashed a previous record by like 8 feet or something. Yeah. And, you know, it's always weird when they keep these records because they go back to like 1865 and stuff. And it's like, I didn't know anyone was here in 1865. Right. Well, there.
They were at the Juanipero Serra at the mission was actually himself in his own writing these things down.
I know. It's like some guy from a Frangelico bottle robe, like a friar came out there. And the thing is it filled up the mule trough halfway.
Yes, that's what so he held right. a jug it's, up and, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily trust those records, but this is definitely the worst we've ever seen it, right?
Yeah. And today was absurd. I was sitting in my home, all of a sudden, thundering lightning and hail, so sheets of hail, so intense.
Oh, I didn't get
you couldn't see across my yard. I mean, it was just great.
Oh, my God.
Then all of a sudden, I see emergency vehicles.
Ugh.
Whole hillside behind us gone.
Oh, my God.
Cars, houses smashed. And the first half hour of the local news is one house off the hill. And what I love is these houses cantilevered with the pools over the edge. They're now down the hillside. We never imagined this could happen.
I rented a house once in the hills on stilts, and I was so freaked out I left. It just seemed so unnatural
imagined?
To me.
I mean, the things that you're suspended in the air.
I know.
I like when they interview the people who are refusing to move. Like, we're no. And they look at it as a very noble, not stupid, but noble quality. Right. No, we're going to shovel out and rebuild. And then we can pay for the next time the slide destroys their shack. But here's the other thing I want. Everyone in the Los Angeles area, remember the biblical rain. Because when they start in with this, we're still in a drought.
right.
You know, they start immediately, like somehow it raining, you know, we've got 75 feet in the last 4 months, and somehow that doesn't affect the drought at all.
I know, and you know what? My new house doesn't have good water pressure, so yeah, we have had enough rain. Take that valve off, that water conservation.
Hey, we've got two minutes for a call here. 2 minutes.
I don't care. I'm not. You know what I'm doing, Drew? I don't care about those calls. I am so angry about the whole drought thing that I'm running around my house just flushing toilets, just randomly.
Nobody
all
knows.
The
be
spigots
be
are
be
running.
Being an East Coaster, I have to say, people get so terrified on the road in the rain here.
Oh, it's
nobody knows how to drive.
Oh, please. Like,
traffic comes to a screeching halt. In New York, we're like, you know.
Rains every day.
Just, schlepping around the city, snow, whatever. It's funny.
Well, people can't drive anyway around Los Angeles. So.
Well, they're too busy doing their makeup, reading a script while eating and making a phone call.
Yes.
By the way, driving.
All right, Drew, now we have 30 seconds.
All right, now we have 30 seconds Sean, who's 31. Sean?
Hi, Drew. Hi, Adam. Adam, you are a genius, and I love your rant. I listen to the show for those.
Thank you, Sean.
That's good.
Thank
Sean.
You.
But either ways, I called for a question for Debbie.
Yes.
Here we go.
I absolutely adored you. I had your poster on my wall when I was 14.
Yes.
And I love the fact that you posed in Playboy.
Thank you.
What I find really funny is that you have a song called Naked that you did before deciding to pose, and Jennifer Love Hewitt did a song called Naked.
Well, she did a song called Bare Naked. Yes.
Bare Naked.
Uh-huh.
Right. Mm. And in that song, she did not actually get naked for the video, although she faked it and made it look like she was.
Hypocrite.
Was your decision to actually pose nude in Playboy, was that actually sort of a challenge to her? Like, hey, you know what? I talked about being naked, being myself.
And here it is. Here it is.
No, it wasn't a challenge to her, but it's interesting because I felt like this was a really weird year for nudity with a lot of hypocrites. Like, there was so many accidental, like, oops, I showed my boob, but I didn't mean it things happening this year. And I feel like so many of the younger pop singers are kind of like, oh, yes, I'm a virgin, I'm virginal, but I wear shirts every day down to my belly button. Like, there's a lot of hypocritical stuff in that area, and I did feel like, you know what? I feel like if you're going to do it, like, really do it and own it. I mean, when I did my cutesy thing, I did it. I literally waved a flag that said Electric Youth on it. It's like, that was my way of being extreme then, and this is kind of my way of being extreme now, so. But it wasn't directed at Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am directing it at Jennifer Love Hewitt. I've been wanting
Get
to see
naked.
Her naked
yeah,
for,
yeah,
like, 10
exactly.
years.
All right. Now, we got to go to break. Here, okay?
All right.
Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Debbie Gibson is our guest. Adam and Charlotte, we'll be back. Hey, buddy, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Adam, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam, can you hear me?
Debbie Gibson in the
Adam,
studio.
Can you see me?
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
I figure since I twisted your arm to go to your first ever musical, I would give you another little musical excerpt.
I had a good time at that musical.
I know you did.
Have you been to anything since?
Yeah, I think I saw a Phantom of the Opera. When
really?
I was
really? The Phantom read. Of the Opera is here. Yes?
Yeah, I saw it in England.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, it was very classy.
Well done.
Classy. It's very classy, that Phantom of the Opera. Oh, my gods. Sid, get me tickets to see Phantom of the Opera. It's a classy show.
How do you like Wicked?
I love Wicked.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it again with my kids.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Love it, love it.
Is there a chance you're going to do anything in that? Or would that
I was
cool?
up for that. They flew me to New York. I had this audition here. They flew me to New York, blah, blah, blah.
Which role?
For Elphaba. And
you would do a great job.
I love that role. I love it. They actually came back. This was the feedback. This is the crazy politics of the
show. She's leaving,
showbiz.
Though, right? She's left it.
She left.
And
this is what they came back and said to me. They said... Yeah, well, they didn't say it to me, so they said it to my management. They said... She was a little too sophisticated and worldly to play this kind of raw university student. And I said, well, they didn't give me any
direction
notes in the room of that sort because I could certainly turn that off, but that's a weird thing. Sometimes a director just wants you to be that character, but to me it's called acting. But it was a fun, it was fun preparing for it because, look, you've got the Wicked mug there.
Different Wicked.
Oh, a different Wicked. Okay.
Yeah. They make adult films.
Oh, see how naive I really am?
Yeah.
Ah, Wicked Pictures. See, I'm immediately my mind's on Broadway.
Immediately my mind's on porn.
I know. See that? Well,
here's let me give musicals a quick plug here by saying, the crowd that listens to Loveline isn't normally the crowd you would find in the audience of a musical. But it's one of these things, and, it's almost like seeing jazz or even classical. No matter where you're from or what age you are or what else you're into, you almost always enjoy it universally.
Mm-hmm. It's very true.
And I know it sounds sort of fey to say that, but it's just true. You don't go to musical, just going out, just the experience is a good time. And I would say the same thing with, for jazz or classical or maybe even the opera, although I've never been to the opera.
Musicals have changed a lot, too. Like, the last musical I did on Broadway was Cabaret. And a lot of people hear Cabaret and they think it's like 42nd Street. They think it's going to be like a bunch of like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Cabaret is a really heavy story for people that haven't
seen it. Yeah, it's a bummer.
It's
about Nazis.
Yeah, it is. And so people, and it's very kind of raunchy and sexually aggressive and in
Nazis
your face.
And sociopaths.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I played Sally Bowles, basically drug addicted, and gets an abortion in the middle of the show. I mean, it's just crazy. And so musicals have changed where they really take people on a trip. They don't just like entertain with smoke and mirrors. I think that there are so many out there that have become a lot more like the new composers for Broadway also have become so much more like their way of writing is so much more accessible to younger people now, I think. Things like Rent, even things like Wicked, they have like a little pop flavor to them. And so people that might be anti like the old Rodgers and Hammerstein 3-hour Sound of Music kind of a thing, we'll probably like some of the newer stuff on Broadway.
Well, I'll just even make it broader, which is everybody just wants to go out and see whatever it is they think they're interested in all the time. And then when you go back and look at your life, you've seen 1,000 things that were all exactly the same.
So you're saying broaden your horizons.
Broaden them. Because it'll actually make you enjoy the things you like more.
So it actually make you,
yeah, it'll make you better at it. No, I just mean like if you got a sport, if you have a sport that you're into, go out and do other sports. It'll probably make you better at your sport.
Right. I in the 70s used to go down to New York when I was in college and saw all the great revivals. You know, I saw Carol Channing and Hello Dolly. I saw mm-hmm. Yul Brynner and The King and I. Mm-hmm. I saw Zero Mostel. And I saw all the original cast or stars
right.
in the great musicals of American theater.
Right, that's amazing.
And I'll never forget any of that. So
that's amazing. So. I know I sat with the guy at dinner tonight who said, oh, yeah, you know, he said, I didn't see the revival of Cabaret. He said the same thing. You know, he's like, he saw, you know, Liza. He saw the originals as well. I wish I was around to have seen those.
I know, we're so old. Anyway.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. If you were around to have seen those, you'd look horrible in Playboy right now.
That's true.
Yeah, I got to look at
That's
it that way.
That's true. I would look like Carol Channing in Hello, Dolly.
No, not even then. Not even then.
God.
Yeah. Oh. All right, here we go.
Yeah, sure.
Let's get to Chris, who is 19. Chris?
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I'm nervous.
Get out of bed there. Get out of bed, Chris. I know it's 2 a.m. where you are, and you've been on hold for 77 minutes, but here we go.
Well, I've got a question about she's my ex-fiance now. Do you think that she's bipolar or what's wrong with her with what's been going on?
What happened?
Well, she cheated on me a few times after she started going over to one of her other friend's house, and her friend has her thinking I'm just so wrong for and I'm bad to her, and now she left me and is going out with someone I thought was my friend.
And she's good. Not cheating. Yeah, she's not cheating, Chris. She left you. That's not cheating. She's gone.
Well, I mean, she was cheating before she left me.
Well, she was on her way out the door while she was messing around with other people.
I don't think that makes her bipolar.
No.
Yeah, but either way, you shouldn't be getting engaged at 19.
Yes, and it's a blessing.
Ultimately, she's doing you a favor.
Oh,
yes,
a mitzvah.
Yes, to put it in Chris's language, a mitzvah. Mazel tov was what we're saying, Chris. The kid's a Jew, right?
Of course. The way he said fiancé.
No, he knows Zero Mostel.
I want Beyonce and Jay-Z to get engaged so that he could be the fiancé of Beyonce. Sorry, I just had to say that. But no, come on. If any of us would have married the person we met, we were with at 19, I don't know about anybody else in this room, but that would not have been a pretty thing.
If I had done committed to anything long term at 19, it would not have been a pretty thing.
Right. All right. So, Chris, it's good news.
She's done you a blessing.
She's done you a favor. She's given you a gift. And she sounds a little chaotic, too. But sometimes people at 19 can get that way. It doesn't mean they necessarily have diagnosable conditions.
Yeah, and don't try to win her back, because at 19, you can't forgive and forget.
He's got that stink of desperation,
too. He's brooding.
Too.
He's home brooding.
He's planning. He's got a war room. He's going to figure out how to get it back.
Well, listen,
I like that word, though, chaotic. I'm going to use that word for myself when I skitz out a little bit. I'm not schizophrenic. I'm chaotic. I like that.
Being with nobody is better than being with a troublemaker. It really is, because they take you with them.
Yes, of course.
That's right.
All right,
I mean, look, Drew.
Yeah.
If you took the most centered, together 19-year-old male in the world and hooked him up with the most chaotic, out-of-control 19-year-old female in the world,
she wins.
She wins every time.
Every time. All matches, all games, all sets.
All sets. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is John, who's 18.
Hello.
Hey, John. What's
happening, John?
Hey, John.
Hey, actually, I'm just playing a computer game. My real question was, I have a little, itchy spot down in there in that area. It's kind of bumpy.
Mm-hmm. Actually, in the pubic area, or actually on the penis? Where is it? That area.
Just around it, really. It's not on the penis or the testicles. It's just around, like, on my legs and stuff.
Oh, so it's like jock itch.
Like underneath them, yeah.
Like jock itch. You have a fungus.
I think so, yeah. I cleaned it up, and that's what my mom told me to do. and just wait a while, you know, see what happens.
Well, you want to get it bone dry, as we say. You want to, like, take a hair dryer, like a handheld hair dryer, and after you shower, dry it off till it's super dry. Are you a kind of heavy guy? Big guy?
Let me say this, Drew.
Let me cut you off. As long as you have the hair dryer down there, you might as well style it.
Oh, God. A little French twist.
I just thought of a new use for the Flowbee. This could be great.
Yeah. Oh, the Flowbee.
Drew, you know what I'll do is I'll part mine in the middle like an alfalfa or an old singer from a barbershop quartet.
With the big cowlick sticking up towards the penis there?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you're going to bust the hair dryer out, you know.
Yeah, why not?
Wow. Shape it up.
But, John, do you want to get some of the over-the-counter antifungal creams? Lotrimin is probably a reasonable one to use. That's probably the best one to use for you. So go to there, get the cream, keep it bone dry, and this will take care of itself, okay?
All right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Go back to that video game.
Yeah, the moisture, you know, the moisture is what people don't realize is the rich environment for the fungi.
Right. I think you get Lamisil over the counter now, too, which is a very potent antifungal agent. This is Eric, who's 30.
Yeah, hi. I got a question for Debbie Gibson.
Yes, Eric, how are you?
Wow.
How's it going, everybody? It's good talking. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
When's your album? You putting out a new album, I'm assuming?
Yeah, well, the single is now in stores, and it's on iTunes, and mainly in Tower Records, and the album will come later in the year.
How do you make money from iTunes?
I'm the writer of the song.
No, but I mean, do they account for...
Oh, yeah, it's scanned. Everything's accounted for.
Get a monthly statement or something from iTunes?
Well, this is actually my first, other than, like, Greatest Hits albums, which, you know, the Atlantic Records owns that master and stuff. They own those old masters. This is my first, like, direct experience with iTunes, and it just went up a week ago, so I'm going to find out.
Nice.
But that's why I have my business people around, because I hate even thinking about that stuff. I check on it, but then I'm like, I want to be free to sing and dance, so, you know.
Adam always said that.
Let Debbie always.
My whole thing is I want to style my pubes and then the singing and dancing begins.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Debbie, I have a question for you, mm-hmm. though. Speaking of your old masters and all that, mm-hmm. Are you getting screwed on that, or are you happy with that, or did you get a raw deal? Did you get a fair deal?
No, I got a fair deal. I got a really fair deal, and because I wrote all those songs, I, you know, obviously I'm in, like, a better position than a lot of the people who don't write their own songs, but with that said, I left that deal earlier. I kind of walked from some big bucks because they were kind of, the label was kind of trying to turn me into, like, a... kind of a vampy, you know, they were trying to, like, vamp me up before my time, before I really was comfortable doing that. So it's kind of been an ongoing theme in my life. If people basically try to, like, push me to do things before I'm ready in my natural evolution, I can't. I just can't.
Well,
how
does it work? Do they say, wear this?
They're like, put her in a little black dress and heels, for God's sakes, and let's put her with, like, you know, baby face and Prince and this one and that one. And I was like, gee, that makes sense after I just sold a ton of records writing my own stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be, like, at the time, like, Sheena Easton was working with Prince, and everybody was, they were, like, putting everyone through the same machine, and I didn't want to be put through that machine. So, yeah, I mean, and I remember saying, I want to do theater. I said, I want to be your Bette Midler. I don't want to be your flavor of the month, like, pop R&B singer. And they were like, well, why do you want to be that? You're only 20. I'm like, because I want to have a future, you know, because you're not going to be on the pop charts every second, and nor would I want to, because the politics of it are so horrendous. So, you know, they didn't quite, we weren't really, just weren't on the same page with
it. Drew this analogy, but
yeah.
It's like, to me, it feels like the musical theater to the singer is sort of what stand-up is to the comedian versus a sitcom.
Maybe.
You know if you're talented, you can work, you can make a good living, but
right.
you're not gonna get the mega bucks like you would if you had the sitcom.
It's not like the superstar in pop culture mega bucks thing, but it's really pure. It's like the relationship with the audience is pure. There are very little politics involved, which I think is good for the soul. You know what I mean? It just really, for me, feeds me, and that's why I like going back and forth, because I can, like, do musicals for a few years, and then that like re-strengthens my backbone to go out in the world and put out another pop album where you feel like, you know, you're really kind of like you know.
Yeah. I would imagine musicals, it's sort of like, oh, you're always staying in shape, too. I mean, as far as performing.
Oh, yeah. It's like being an Olympic athlete.
Multiple shows a week, yeah.
It's really like being an Olympic athlete. It's funny because I did a thing a few weeks ago. I did Broadway on ice, which, first of all, it doesn't get any gayer than Broadway on ice with Brian Boitano. And it was
you just made it gayer.
It just got gayer.
Yeah, just there.
It got a little gayer. But no, it was funny because I was watching. There's such similarities between these athletes and perform. I was like, oh, this is a theater group, only they're on skates. I mean, and it's funny because so many people like. You know, in pop, don't take their voices very seriously, and they don't warm up, and they don't. And it's like you watch an athlete, and you go, "Well, you're not going to like attempt a triple axel without stretching and warming up into it." You know, so it's an interesting. I've always thought of myself as an athlete in terms of, especially 8 shows a week. When you're doing 8 shows a week in theater, a lot of people think, "Oh, well, you just show up the 3 hours at night, and that's it." But it's not the case. It's 3 really intense hours, and like everything you do during the day is geared to
preparing for those
3 hours. So you're very aware of everything you eat and how much you talk and how much you sleep. And
well, yeah. who are you talking to? It's the same with me in this radio show.
I know. You're so disciplined. I've always been in awe of that.
Yeah, people are like, well, you just roll in and do your 2 hours. Oh, contraire. Contraire, I roll in 4 minutes before I begin doing the 2 hours. How dare you? And I got to watch what I eat.
Mentally prepare, and I know how it is.
Oh, and I'm in front of the mirror saying elocution, and the rain in Spain falls mainly
on the plane. That Broadway show was really classy. Yeah, that's your speech exercise.
Every night. All right, Drew, who do we got?
Jason, 19.
Hello?
What's up, Jason?
Hey, how's it going?
All right, do you have a radio on, or what's all the noise in the background?
Oh, that was my radio, yeah. Sorry about that.
All right, here we go. Go.
Hello?
Jason, yes, you're on
the
air.
Talk to us, Jason. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, well, I actually have a question for Drew, actually.
Yeah?
And my question is, I just recently got a Prince Albert. Of course, I assume you all know what that is. And,
yeah, bro.
Since then, it was just 3 weeks ago, and I've been having a lot of trouble getting erect, actually, since I've gotten that.
Well, your penis wants to stay out of the way.
Yeah.
It's frightened another spear is going to come around.
Yep.
Really? You know, you just put a spear through your penis. Why are you surprised that there's problems with erection? First of all, it's healing. It's going to take another couple weeks before things really heal. And during that healing process, there certainly can be problems. And I have heard of long-term problems with both erection and sensation from PAs.
So,
yeah, I don't think you're going to have that necessarily. I mean, you're only just a couple weeks into it. Again, your penis is healing. It's been through a shock. It's conserving energy.
To call me old-fashioned, but I remember when PAs were production assistants.
I'm confused. I don't know what you're
talking
about.
Or those announcements in school, PA announcements.
Old man, what do you mean?
That's right.
Public address system.
Public address system, yeah.
Yeah, not no more.
Drew, you call them PAs?
What
do you call it, Jason? They used to call him PAs.
Hang up on Jason.
We call him Prince Albert.
I know you do. I know you call
him
Prince Albert.
Would you hang up on
him? But here, I find it bewildering, though, that somebody will take a foreign body and jam it through a delicate organ. It's an organ system. And then be sort of bewildered why something might... It's not... It's changed now. It's like, what? If you cut it off,
it's
would you be surprised if it changed?
It's recoiling in fear.
Yeah, it's just trying to stay out of the way.
And the whole notion that there's no anesthetic involved with that process, to me, is almost unthinkable.
I, as a female, I'm getting, like, chills up my spine thinking about
this. So imagine what it does
to us.
No, I barely have a penis and I'm in pain. I know what you're saying, Debbie.
Yeah, but you've got that whole thing about like a little kid when it hurts more to have a shot. You know what I mean? The fibers are closer together in your penis.
They're not spread out.
Right,
you're right. They're densely clustered.
That's right.
Yes, that's right. That's why I have to style my pubes. But here's all I'm saying. I think part of the deal is there's no anesthetic.
I think that's
the rush.
Half the time it's a drug addict getting another rush.
Yeah.
Half the time, that's it.
I know we sound like square old men, but I'll never understand that.
Yeah, why do
The pattern is people that have been physically abused commonly do that.
Uh-huh.
Addicts commonly do that. They get a rush or they get an opioid surge from it, from the experience. And people with antisocial tendencies tend to do it, so in a sociopathy, that kind of thing. And then there are people that do it for stylistic reasons, get caught up in it and all. But for the most part, when people have what we call aggressive piercings, meaning piercings through parts of the body where they really don't belong, we start thinking about childhood traumas.
Can it cause infections and stuff?
Yes,
and all
you can
kinds
lose
of
your penis. You can lose your clitoris. Whoa. Yes, that can happen.
Sounds like
what's
fun.
Amazing to me, though, is it doesn't happen more often.
Right.
That's rather remarkable. I mean, the body's an amazing thing that way.
Yeah,
all right, well,
but I talked to a woman. I talked to a woman last night. I was in Tampa, and I was eating dinner out, at a cafe in a Our waitress was heavily pierced, and she said that her boyfriend worked at the piercing parlor up the street. And I said, does he do any clitoral piercings or hood piercings or any of the vaginal stuff? And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, doesn't it bother you? I mean, as a girlfriend, that this guy is in there with these women doing this work? And she said
no, because I'm a stripper.
No. She said no, because they all have ugly vaginas. And I was like,
that is nut job.
I was like, really? And she was like, yeah. And her thing was, it was compensation for having an unattractive vagina.
Oh my!
People will justify anything.
Do 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 do. I mean, that is nutty thinking. Right?
Yeah, I was going to argue with her, Drew, but I thought I might just finish my Greek food and call it a night.
Yeah, a much wiser decision.
Thank you.
All right, let's see here. This is now John, who is 17. John?
Hey, guys.
Hey, John.
I had a question for Adam.
Yeah.
And that's, I was wondering if you could teach me the proper strip club etiquette. Because I'm getting into that stage of my life where I'm going to be hanging out in a lot of strip clubs, and I'm not so sure how to act.
Well, okay, I'll give you a handful of tips.
But hold on, I'm more intrigued by the idea that one graduates to a stage of life of strip club visitation.
Well, is he 17?
Yes.
I'll be 18 soon.
Soon he'll be 18 and he'll get to go to the strip clubs.
But he's planning to hang out at strip clubs, not just visit a strip club, but this is the stage of life where one hangs out and says, oh my God, what's happening here?
I know, but look, Drew, when you're a young man who's, dying to see a naked woman in the flesh, and somebody says, in 4 months, it'll be perfectly legal for you to walk in the front door of these places and sidle up next to the stage and stare at them as long as you want. See a bunch of fake boobs, you'll make the proclamation that I'm going to move into one of these establishments.
I see. Okay.
You don't realize you're going to,
anxious to hear that.
It's unbridled enthusiasm. It's not an actual stage of life. Okay, got it. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's sort of, you know what it's like? It's like if you were on a desert island starving and you said, when I get back to the States, I'm going to bury my face in the first buffet I find. I'll never leave.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
Okay, got it. All right, John. So here you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Adam,
all right.
Etiquette. All right.
Well, okay, I'm just a few tips off the top of my head. One is get your ATM money out at your ATM, because the ones in the club have quite a surcharge. Sometimes, $5-$8 sometimes.
Got it.
So you want to get that. Number two, you got to don't wear denim. If you're going to get a lap dance, you don't want the Levi's with a big row of buttons grinding a hole in your joint. Or, in my case, ruining my stylized pubic hair.
Right. Should you wear a condom?
Wear something. Well, let's go for a dry run the first time and see how it works.
Right.
You don't have to sit right at the edge of the stage. You can sit back three or four rows, and then you don't have to keep throwing money out on the stage.
No, Adam,
that's a nice.
If I were to sit up front in the stage, at what point do I toss up the money?
Well, you should toss it out at the end of each dance, but it's nice if you can sit next to a guy who's tossing money out, and it oftentimes doesn't land right in front of him, so some of that money can be mistaken for your own.
This is strip club etiquette for the frugal man.
Right. Do not ball up the dollars and throw them at the woman's vagina. That angers them. I found that out the hard way.
But you throw the money on the stage? I thought you, like, put them into the... You could tell I don't go to strip clubs. I thought you put them in the G-string. No?
It's kind of illegal. They can't actually take it from you in a lot of places. You can put it in the G-string, but more often than not, you end up just setting it on the sort of bar edge, on the edge of the stage in front of you.
And that was another question I had, is, like, where do I put my hands?
You mean if you're getting a lap dance?
Yeah, sure.
If you're getting a lap dance, you just put you just keep going until they stop you with the hands. But you know what you don't want to do is any goosing or grabbing or anything like that.
Okay.
You know you got to play.
They get touched.
You can touch them.
Well, you got to play it. You got to play it by ear, which is some places, and it depends where the guy's calling from and what his, you know, municipality is. There's some places where you can do a hell of a lot of, like, ass grabbing and thigh rubbing and all that, and then there's other places you just have to put your hands at your side. So you got to kind of scope it out. Watch other guys get lap dances and see what they're doing and try to do, you know, about as much as they're doing. That's always a good one. And, other than that, you know, act interested and, you know, take a shower. And I like to rinse with a little Lavoris before I head in.
Now, Adam, I mentioned the condom not because he'd be having sex with the strippers, but we learned.
No, I know.
Okay.
We have learned.
Just in case.
I have learned, and
I know.
Debbie.
I know what you're saying.
Yes, you will be shocked and dismayed when you find out that a lot of guys have an orgasm in these places.
That's what I got it. I was with you.
She was ahead of you.
I know. First off, I want to strangle these guys. I'm so envious. I can't believe they get to have an orgasm at the strip club. But you know,
isn't it weird, watching other guys though? Kind of. Come on. Okay, that's gayer than Broadway on Ice.
You talking about the orgasm part?
Just watching other guys, like you're saying, like watch other guys and see how they do it. And I don't see girls would never be having this conversation.
No, here's what you also need to do. You need to scout out to see which girls give the more vigorous lap dances.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an art.
You should write a book.
I've written three. Mm-hmm. No. The other thing is, too, is you can't... John, is John still there?
Yeah,
is he listening?
Back. He's here. There he is.
Yeah. Go ahead, you know, pick your girl out. You don't have to wait. You know, like, girls will come up to you, and if you don't like her, don't get a lap dance from her. I think a lot of guys get sort of... greenhorns get bullied into getting lap dances from chicks they don't really like. Don't worry. Go ahead and just send them packing. You can just tell them, you know, later, and they'll just keep moving until the one you like comes up to you.
Say beat it? You
should write a book on strip club etiquette.
You say beat it?
Absolutely, Adam.
Show some decorum, but you just give that a little later, sweetie. I'm enjoying my drink, and which in your case is going to be a grape soda.
And then you grab her best friend.
Okay, Pops.
And wait for the foxy one to come around.
Hey, Pops, we got to take a break here.
All right.
But I think Debbie's leaving us. She has an early morning call for a radio satellite tour. Is that true?
That is true. Oh, I think, well, I'm okay. Are you okay? I'm looking at...
10 more minutes.
Yeah, all right. I'll stay a little while longer.
One more.
Yeah.
Debbie
That's
Gibson
okay.
in here. The
I'm
new
having
album
fun.
Is, new single is called Naked. She's in Playboy March this month, next month. Or it's out this month.
It's out.
Right?
It's out already, yeah.
On newsstands everywhere. I'm Dr. Drew. He's Adam Carolla. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew, 1-800-LOVE-191. And producer Ann just handed me some copy here. It says that we're all next week on Loveline. We'll be giving away an iPod Shuffle. At the beginning of each show, we will give you details and tell you what to listen for so you can win this great prize. That's cool. So starting next week, we'll be giving away iPod Shuffles all week long.
Cool.
And let me say this. You can't find those. I was talking to someone who was trying to get some of those as gifts for somebody and said they couldn't find them anywhere.
Yeah, no, I have a regular iPod. What is the iPod? I'm like...
Shuffle is about this big.
Uh-huh.
And it holds 240 songs, and it shuffles them randibly for you.
Very cool. Just a little mixtape for you.
It's like the size of a stick of gum.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know the problem with the old iPods, the first generation, is it's got that stupid touch thing where if you just pick it up, it either turns on or turns off or shifts
songs. Yeah, you have to hit the lock. You have to hit the lock button.
I know, but this brings up a bigger point.
What is that bigger
point? Well, my point is we need, okay, here's what I want to say. Many years ago, about 20 years ago, all this digital stuff started coming in, and they replaced all the gauges in your car with these digital gauges. So instead of seeing the tachometer needle go up or seeing the speedometer needle go up, you just see this digital readout like the beginning of the $6 million man. But the point is it doesn't work well in your brain just seeing this digital thing spool up, numbers getting higher. You kind of need the old thing, and
the
we
visual.
Need buttons. Yeah, I'm just saying, if anyone from the Apple Corporation is listening, people like a positive feeling with their buttons. They like to turn stuff on and off and click. They don't just like this stupid thing where you wave your hand over it, and it does whatever it wants to do.
Right.
That's
we
the know, sucky part about the old one.
What's funny is the old. Oh,
yes.
Sorry. No,
yeah, that's
say,
the old
like,
one. The new ones aren't that way. The shuffle, they fixed it.
Yeah. Ah, interesting. See, I like old recording equipment for that reason. I have this old 12-track that I want to get fixed because you can see everything in front of you.
Wow.
You know,
yeah,
you see all the faders, and you, yeah.
You know, you push
yes,
the buttons.
I'm with you.
Yes, when you pushed a button back in the day, you knew it was pushed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Instead of it being on some other screen and you had to pull it up and you had to, yeah. Mm-hmm. I hear you.
No, but isn't it frustrating like when you go to the ATM and it's just the touch thing and you're putting in, you know, you're putting in your information, but it's just by touch. You don't actually get to depress any buttons. I like to push a button down.
Yep.
Makes
I like
me
the
know
whack-a-mole
I'm alive.
Game. I like the whack-a-mole game. I like to hit things
whack-a-mole.
Over the head.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly where I was going.
I know it was. I'm with you, Adam.
This is
simpatico.
Mm-hmm.
Tara, 19. Tara, whatever.
You say Tara, I say Tara. Hey.
Hi. Hi. You guys can hear me, right?
We hear
yep.
you.
Yes.
Okay, cool, because I'm on a cell phone and I'm in my room and it's really hard. Anyway, I recently was diagnosed with a form of bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've had depression my whole entire life, but it developed into bipolar disorder. And, actually my entire life, I've been kind of searching, like, always on the prowl for guys. And it's, like, this almost kind of an obsessive thing where I feel like I have to be desired by all the guys around me, even if I'm not interested in them, you know? And I know about narcissism and everything, but, like, I don't know about your psychological, you know, background. I know you're a doctor, but I don't. So,
were you sexually abused growing up?
You know, I've been asked that question a lot, and I don't think if I have, it's been repressed.
Was it possible that it was sort of a something we call by proxy? That was sort of a more subtle thing, where you were, you know, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like a. You know,
a covert sexual abuse where you were sort of, you know, your dad was a little closer to you than he should have been, or that you were your mom wasn't around and you sort of replaced mom for dad or anything like that.
Sometimes my dad would like hug me when I was like, "Dad, just get off," things like that. But
so some boundary issues maybe in the family.
Yeah, huh? I have a lot about control and boundary issues. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
weird when your dad hugs you and you tell him to get off.
Yeah, like, he'll just keep on hugging. I'm like, dude, Dad, just, like, sometimes I just had to yell at him, you know? Like, I need my boundaries, and...
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. That sounds like more you than him, though. I mean, was he doing anything creepy?
No, but, like, I have had dreams where my father rapes me.
Yeah.
And, like, I actually asked him, I think I said something about it to him, and he got really pissed off, but, like...
That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
There's something covert going on in any event, and some of the covert stuff. You've got bipolar disorder. It's a lot of things that adds up to, you know, some sexual issues and some preoccupations. Have you been acting out on these impulses? Do you have lots of men in your life?
No, actually, I haven't. I think a lot of it's in my head. You know how some people think everyone's looking at them, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like that for me. I always feel like I'm being judged, especially by the male sex, and that I need to keep up this
facade.
Yeah.
All right, but
yeah.
No, don't most young women, especially named Tara or Tara, want every guy to desire them?
Well, we, you know, I've said this to friends before. Like, I think we all want our group of men that adore us to just be ours. And I had this recently with a friend that I was like, well, I'm friends with this guy, and there's always, like, there can be that kind of male-female energy going without anything ever happening. But then I ended up hooking him up with a friend of mine because I said, well, that's just selfish of me to have this, like, to want somebody's energy all to myself when they really could be off having a real relationship with somebody else.
Yeah.
So I think all girls, in a way, want that.
You want to control
men. Even ones named Deborah, not just Tara or Tara.
Yeah. To be like, to be the Buddha and have everybody, yeah, I know what you're saying, to be quote-unquote worshipped.
All right, not the healthiest impulse.
Have you had a real relationship yet, though?
Oh, yeah, actually, I just recently had one, and I think that's where my depression developed into bipolar disorder. It came to the point where I have, like, severe anxiety attacks at night, and...
I used to have anxiety attacks, actually, so I know what that's like.
Yeah, like, it would just come like clockwork, every like at 4 o'clock.
Are you doing drugs?
No.
Nothing?
I've been switched to Wellbutrin.
No. Were you doing any illicit drugs, though?
No.
Okay,
just,
all right.
Yeah, I'm just letting you know that I switched to, my doctor gave me a higher dose of Wellbutrin.
Uh-huh. What are you doing for mood stabilizer? Are you on Depakote or something?
Yeah, and it worked for, like, about 2 weeks, and then, like, today, I noticed, like, all of a sudden, I had the same thing happen to me. I had the sudden anxiety attack, and I went to the gym, and like I'm at the gym, and then I noticed myself doing it again. It's something that I had been doing for like so much of my life, and I had these 2 weeks of bliss where I'm completely confident in myself, and like I don't feel I have to impress anybody, male or female, and like I can just do whatever I want.
All right, remember that thought. That's more where you should be all the time. And some of it is the biology, but some of it you may need some psychological help too.
The anxiety attacks, because I had them for like 3 years, and what I learned as I got older was that and I was around that age, and I think a lot of girls, 18, 19, 20, you're going through such a huge transition, and anxiety attacks are so real, and people don't take them seriously, and you literally feel like you're going to die. Like you cannot breathe, you can't sit, you can't stand, you can't think, you can't, you know. I mean, it's really, really serious stuff. And I think once you start getting it under control, and as you get older and you go through it, you realize you're not going to die. And it, like, you kind of are able to break the cycle.
You can master.
On your own.
You can master the feelings.
Yeah, because if you panic, I used to panic over the idea of getting a panic attack, and it would spiral out of control. And now, even now, you know, I still can get that feeling coming on, but I know that nothing is going to happen except I'm going to get short of breath and whatever, and it's going to be okay. And that starts to break the chain of that attack coming on.
Here is Jay.
Tara, hold on. Let me just finish with Tara. She just sounds like she's way up in her head about everything. Like, my dad hugged me and it freaked me out and I have these dreams. And she just seems like she's going through what a lot of 19-year-olds are going through. And she ought to stop giving herself so many labels. Like, I think she's just labeling herself as, you know, almost, you know, ready to be institutionalized. She needs to just relax, take her meds, do some therapy, get some exercise, and stop sifting through the past looking for trouble. Thank you.
Fair enough.
All right.
Jay, 25.
Yeah, how's it going, man?
Jay?
Hey, I just wanted to bring back the PA bit. I was born with hypospadias.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it's like a born with a PA hole.
Basically.
That's
Prince
convenient.
Albert hole. All right.
Ain't that kind of crazy? So I went through nursing school and stuff the whole bit, and like I learned about it, and I found out it was normal, but like when I went to join the military prior to nursing school, like one of the doctors, it was some chink, he basically denied me access into the military.
Hold on, did he say chink?
I believe he did.
He did.
Hey man, you know,
I
speak from the heart. I just speak the first thing
that's
out of my mouth, man.
Oh wow. And I get in trouble for saying Chinaman.
Hey, I've heard you say rice ball, man.
No.
Wow. That doesn't sound like that's not one of mine.
Yeah, that is one of yours too, man. It was
rice bowl?
My sister always says, rugs are Oriental, people are Asian.
That's right. All right. Well, it was this Asian doctor that basically denied me access into the Navy when I was 17, but which I'm thankful for, but I just...
Oh, why'd you call him a chink if you're thankful for it?
I'm now...
English, and I was like, he said that it would leak, you know, which I don't know if he understood that there's a sphincter by the bladder, you know, that controls...
I think he would understand that, but have you had the hypospadias repaired?
No, they wanted me to go and get it repaired by a urologist, but I've kind of, it's grown on me, you know.
You like it?
Yeah, I like it. And I have occasionally put in the earring, you know, not the earring, but the piece for the PA.
Stick it in there because you've got the track already set up.
Yeah, and I don't have no problems with it. Like, it's the thing, it's something that God put there, you know. It's like,
so you might as well just take advantage of it. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
All right, Jay. But that's a
God
common, you
put
should,
it there.
Yeah. God pierced him. You should know, Jay, that that's a common repair, that hypospadias repair is not that. It's a less of a big deal than you might imagine.
It's just having a second hole at the bottom of the head?
Yeah, exactly.
And urine will come out of there
when
you're urinating. But when you're not urinating, it's not going to come out of there.
That's right. That's correct.
All right. I kind of like, you know what I would do? I would have the urethra, the regular
closed.
Hole. I would
closed.
Have that closed and just
nice.
Go out the bottom part.
Yeah.
You know why? Because that way I could take a leak when I had a bar.
Oh, no, that's thinking.
Yeah,
wow.
Wouldn't go.
Things
wouldn't
that
go,
girls never think about.
Well, it wouldn't go all over the place. You know, Drew, you know when you get up in the morning, you have that boner, right? Uh-huh. And you go to take a whiz in the toilet.
It's wiper spray. It's going every which way.
No, but it's going straight out.
But also can spray around, too.
Well, that might happen with the hole in the bottom, too. All I'm saying.
Directionality. I see. Yeah, it's good.
You would feel like a champ. You would close up the regular hole. You would stand with your erection right over the top of the toilet and whiz at a 90-degree angle straight down.
I wonder if Jay can just hold the tip and get that effect already. Why don't we ask him?
I bet he could. Yeah, ask him.
Oh, it won't come up.
Jay, you there?
Jay?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, well, I've actually, P does come out the hole. It actually veers to the left, and I have to cover it with my finger.
But Adam's question is, can you cover the urethra outflow?
I think my urethra.
Try it now.
It's kind of a little too big to try to clamp off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have tried that first thing.
Yeah.
I would have done that. The first thing is that I would have done that right out of the gate. Would have been my first move.
Poor Debbie's fading here. We got to move her along. Get her our way. She's worrying about the morning.
All right.
Debbie Gibson.
You're making me sound like a lightweight. It's been a little crazy. I kind of like moved into a new house, flew to New York and back, and just running.
Hey,
it's all good, though. It's all good.
An hour and 45 minutes. That's enough.
Pretty good. Yeah, 46 now. Naked is the name of the single. Get it on iTunes or whatever.
Tower.
Napster.
Yeah, I think so. I know for sure Tower and iTunes.
Playboy.
This week. Playboy.
Great
on
spread.
Now.
And look for you in any productions coming up?
No, that's kind of it for now. But you can check the website. It's Deborah-Gibson.com, DEBORAH, for upcoming appearances and good stuff like that. It was good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Good to talk to you again, Adam.
Good to talk to you, Debbie. I'll see you
soon. Thank you. All right.
And we will be right back. Hey, it's Loveline. Jeff Probst tomorrow night. Seth Green later in the week. 1-800-LOVE-191. Hey, Adam.
Yeah.
It's good times, huh?
Yeah, it's good times.
Debbie's great.
Yeah, she's nice. She's always nice. She, I think she could have easily gone another direction, you know, getting started as early as she did and having the kind of success that she had, but she did.
Yeah. She's not changed, you know what I mean, through this whole thing. Integrity is sort of the word, right?
Yeah, well, she is in Playboy, but... Other
no, but,
than
she,
that,
but if you see it, I mean, she's done it. She's done it. She didn't do it. I really think doing it at 35 is very different than doing it at 19.
If she's in her car listening right now at the age of 34, Drew, she's going to get angry.
34,
I
beg your pardon. Yes. I beg your pardon. But, I mean, the point is doing it in your 30s is different than doing it in your teens.
Yeah, people don't like to see it as much.
No. The fact that they like to see it as much is a special triumph. This is Raquel, who's 18.
Raquel?
Hi.
What's going on?
A little over a year ago, I was in a relationship with this guy, and basically, like, he assaulted me.
Mm-hmm. Sexually?
Physically and sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And, the guy I'm with now, he's really cool, but, just because of what happened... There's kind of problems, like, when we're trying to be close, you know?
Yeah, I imagine that wasn't the first sexual sort of whatever you want to call it, abuse that you've had in your lifetime, right?
No, but it was the same guy who had done it before, just kind of not full out kind of assault.
But the fact that you would be with somebody
not full out. I thought she said pull out.
No.
Because I look at it as an assault when they do pull out.
Usually you know something. Yes, I hear you. Something around age 8. Something around age eight or so, maybe. Something happened to you even younger that sort of sets you up for this post-traumatic stress reaction.
If it did happen, I have no good recollection of it. I mean, I do know that there were other guys before that who would kind of like try to get fresh, and I'm just like, you know, please don't.
Let me get something straight. This guy did this to you when you were how old?
17.
And he did it one time, but you didn't break up with him.
No, I didn't.
Right. But that by itself doesn't imply sexual abuse.
Sometimes also girls get, you know, with these guys.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Cast a spell over them.
Yes, I'm absolutely saying I agree with that. I agree.
All right.
Well, here's the deal. We are out of time, and the fact is, she has been a victim of a victim. Or was that we decided we're calling them of some sort of sexual aggressive act, and that's something that can really traumatize women. It can make it difficult to be intimate and to be sexual again, and have all kinds of complex feelings of shame and anxiety and freezing reactions and dissociation. And that's something that should be treated. Best treated, that kind of thing, if it is really just limited to the, let's call it a rape, would be a sort of a group setting. So other women who've been through these kinds of traumas and support one another as you sort of make a narrative out of this that is something you can sort of hang on to and make sense of.
Yeah, so you and the new boy will work it out.
That's right.
All right, Drew, put the show to bed for me. I'm going to sleep.
I'm putting you to bed first.
All right, baby.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow night with Jeff Probst.
Fantastic.
All right, we'll be right back. Well, that does it for another episode of Loveline. We'll be back tomorrow night with Jeff Probst and Adam in the studio. So until his return, I am here, Dr. Drew, on his behalf saying mahalo.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Eagold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.